All right, very welcome back to the 9 till noon show here on Highland Radio. And the population of the studio has grown really quite significantly since we were last speaking to you. In studio now, we have Kierzo and the F-Aids. Is that how Kieran I'm pronouncing that correctly?
Yeah, Kierzo and the F-Aids.
Kierzo and the F-Aids. Kieran is a singer, songwriter. Grace Murphy. Grace, good morning to you.
Hello.
Good to have you with us as well. Rhythm guitar and backing vocals. Carl Warner's the lead guitar. Hi, Carl. We've got you stuck at the back there. We put the noisy ones at the back. Grace Nugent's on bass. Yep. And Cahir, who makes the most noise altogether, he's back there on
drums.
Listen, we'll put you outside the next time. But listen, it's good to have yous back. Right, how long have yous been playing as a collective? I recognise a few of your faces. Not all of you have been in here before, have you?
Yeah, I haven't been here before.
You haven't? No, I know. So someone was different. Okay, so how long have yous been playing together? Is this the melding of a couple of bands or just a complete new...
Well, essentially, I wrote the song... And we were getting it recorded, so I just needed some help from the guys. And Cahir's my wee brother, so that's his band.
Yeah.
I'm the older one. And so we just came together to write the song.
All right, so it was the F-Aids that was you guys.
It's a collaboration.
I was really struck about how good yous were. Because you see a lot of stuff, and a lot of stuff is brilliant, don't get me wrong. But then there's stuff that's, you know, there's levels and everything in life, 100%. Isn't there? Right, so Kieran, what's this song about? Why did you write it?
I wrote the song during the pandemic. I was kind of at a high period of anxiety in myself because of, you know, different pressures. And I thought, like, let me write a song about it, use my creative outlet as a young person for good. I reflected on what gives me anxiety, what gives my friends anxiety, and then I touched on them issues in the song and... we were trying to create that sort of overwhelming feeling that you get from anxiety.
But everything's on top of you.
Everything's just coming at you, and then there's twists and turns, and you've thoughts in your head that you can't control. So, yeah, we just tried to put that into the song. It kind of represents how people maybe sometimes don't deal with their anxiety very well. And now with the Donegal Youth Service, with Connecting for Life, we're just trying to show people and promote that these are things that you can do.
And for some people, it puts a name on it, Kieran. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
You're obviously aware and you're able to say, right, this is how I feel, this is what's making me feel, and this is what it's called. Yeah. There's an awful lot of people out there that maybe can't identify. They think, was this just me? Is there something wrong with me? Yeah. Am I on my own? No one else feels like this. Why is it on? And it's not. And I think once you can, I think once you understand that many people can feel the same.
Yeah, everyone feels it.
It helps to some extent.
100%.
Did you find the process of writing this song helped you with your anxiety?
100%. Yeah, I think like it always helps me just put my feelings into song. And I think a creative outlet is a really great way to kind of help with your, rationalize your thoughts maybe. Mm. You know?
Mm-hmm. All right. So, I mean, there's one thing to write a song, and then there's another thing to sort of get a few friends together. Yeah. Why did you decide then to go down the route of trying to record it and to get it out there? I mean, it's obviously it's a natural progression.
Yeah, well, we got
not
asked.
Not everyone does that.
Yeah, yeah. We got asked by Connecting for Life and Donegal Youth Service, would we record the song and help it to promote mental health, especially at this time of the year, you know, January time, just after Christmas. It's not an easy time for young people especially, and people can feel lost with so many different issues. So,
and what's it called?
It's called Anxiety.
And are we going to hear it now? Yeah, should we do it now?
We're going to hear it.
Let's go.
Let's do
okay,
it.
Now this is quite impressive because everyone's just turned up and plugged everything in. So we'll see how it all sounds.
Yeah, we're hoping it's sounding good.
Kieran, obviously, lead vocals. Grace is doing some backing vocals, and the rest of the crew, you'll hear from them. Right, take it away whenever you are ready, guys.
Yeah.
Let me sit at home. I just wanna be on my own. If I had a choice, I'd give you my own voice, but I don't wanna be alone. Making friends, rigid ends, all smoke up in frigid tents. Ambitious goals, she's in a hole. Won't you give me back my soul? He's sitting up all night, tapping that screen, looking like he hasn't peed in weeks. And I feel so scared that I accept defeat, distorted view, anxiety. Oh, A-N-X-I-E-T-Y-O.
invisible. Better not wear those shoes. And we never challenge the invincibles, 'cause they have got so much to lose. I'm in my head, think I'm dead. Won't you get me to my bed? And I roll like I scream and shout. What the hell's this all about? He's sitting up all night, tapping that screen, looking like he hasn't peed in a week. And I feel so scared that I am starting to feel distorted view, anxiety. Oh,
done. Brilliant. Excellent.
Thank you.
I mean that. That's great.
Yeah.
Something, it's really good. You could play that anywhere, I think.
Happy days. Yeah. Well, it's on Spotify and Apple Music and everything, so if you want to give it a listen.
See, this is the kind of stuff radio stations need to be playing.
Yeah, 100%. You know,
I love Spotify, don't get me wrong, it's fantastic.
And yeah,
all the streaming services available, but that is that's worthy of any playlist, I think, on any radio station.
100%.
It's available now on Spotify. Is this the only track you've worked together on?
Yeah, we've done bits and bobs
like
practicing,
what?
But...
Like, you know, what else have you practiced?
Oh, it's under wraps at the moment. Top secret, stay tuned, guys.
Right, well, Kieran, clear off. F8, it's all yours now. no, brilliant. Well done. That's fantastic. And what are you going to do with that next? Obviously, things like this, plug it, right?
Yeah, yeah,
Let people know it's out there. Do you just make a video for it?
Yeah, well, there's a video in the works at the moment, so it should be out in the next few weeks.
And we have a song competition, find brilliant new Irish music on this radio station at the moment. It would be a sin if you didn't enter it.
100%.
In my opinion. Because it's really, really good. Okay, fantastic. I can't wait to hear what else he's come out with. Is this going to work now beyond this project?
Yeah, well, I mean, I suppose I'll be releasing my own music now in the future, and then the F8s have their own music.
This has got split up. This has got split up due to artistic differences all over it, hasn't it?
Yeah. I'm a hard person to work with.
We'll just enjoy it while we have it, yes?
Exactly.
I want to go my own way. He's holding me back. All right. Frankie wants to come in now and he wants to bathe in the light of your talent.
Yeah, that's it.
I'm sure.
That's it. So he knows best.
Frankie McGreevy, our generation project manager. Frankie, what about that? That's 1 second now. That was something else, wasn't it?
Absolutely incredible. Well done, guys. Unbelievable.
If that camera's in your way, just shift it out of the way. It doesn't matter for production purposes.
Is this or anything like that? No, just move it.
Okay,
that's a camera.
We've seen them. come here. Our generation works with the HSE. Tell us about that project and how this kind of ties into that as well.
Yeah, well, the Connecting for Life project is something we've been working with the Donegal Youth Service, Our Generation project, in partnership with the HSE. So the Connecting for Life is an HSE organisation. So we've been rolling out Assist, which is 2 days suicide awareness talks, and Safe Talk, which is a half day intervention with key contacts and professionals who work with young people, and just so that they can have better conversations around exactly what these guys are talking about, around anxiety, around depression, and before and earlier, before it becomes something that's more acute that needs serious attention.
Can I ask you, as young people, if you ever want to shout up, or even Kieran, you're sitting in the mic there, like, do you know when we talk about this? And when I say us, I'm on about the people that make decisions aren't 18 or 19 or 17 or 16. They're old men like me, mostly, right? But, you know, what you're doing is amazing raising awareness and speaking to young people. But do you feel that you're do you get a sense that you're being listened to by people within the HSE? And this is not a criticism of Frankie. And I know Frankie works closely with you, and maybe I could ask him the same question. Do you feel you and these people are being listened to. But do you know what I mean? Do you feel that there is, if you need help, that there's support there, or that people actually truly understand, you know, the anxiety that a lot of young people are feeling now?
Yeah, I do. I do think that as long as you know who to go to and where to go and what
properly
to talk about
it, then.
Like,
okay.
I mean, the services are here. I suppose that's why we're on the radio today talking about it. It's to raise awareness for this, because some people mightn't feel that they're heard. But I do think personally, and I think these guys maybe would agree, that we do have the support as young people, and even given this opportunity to make this song and use our creative platform to help other young people and maybe connect with them in a way that through music is a way that people can relate, especially as young people.
Yeah. And Frankie, that was the answer expected, but it's nice to hear it from young people rather than me and
of
you
course,
talking about what young people are feeling. I'm much younger than you are, obviously, but you know what I mean? I'm still
just
a little
don't look
bit...
It. Just
touché. All right, come in. Touché in a bit. Right, so what else do you think... do you want to add, Frankie? Just...
Well, you know, just to mention the referral pathway document that we've been working with Connecting for Life and with CIPSE, the Children and Young People Services Committee. So that's just the serious piece where if parents are out there and young people are out there listening and they feel that they need some support, to have a look at the CIPSE website, CYPSC, and the Connecting for Life website and the Donegal Youth Service website, and you'll see referral pathways that you can get access to help right away. Youth work is like a step below that kind of clinical intervention. And what we're doing here mainly is providing platforms for self-expression for these guys. And that's all we do.
And Frankie, you know? I know you love your music, but that's a particularly good track, isn't it?
Because it's incredible.
Sometimes, and this is not in any way a criticism, this is not to de-elevate anyone else, but sometimes tracks that are attached to an issue, you know what I mean?
You wonder,
They don't necessarily have the same authenticity as that. But even removing the issue, that's just a very good track.
Well,
does that make sense?
It's about being genuine, right?
Yeah.
I mean, we can all, when you're given a theme to sing about, there's something inauthentic about that. But you can tell with Kieran, that's something that came to him.
Yeah. Just wanted to scream and shout. And get it out.
Exactly.
I'm not one of those people that get deep into things, right, in terms of music, because I don't know enough about it. But there's a controlled desperation in parts of that song as well, which talks to anxiety, thinking that what goes on in your head.
Yeah, it's not really contrived.
I think it's really actually quite clever.
Fantastic.
Is that what you were trying to
do? Yeah, 100%. In the recording as well, we were laughing in the background at the very end, and it's kind of, it makes you a little bit uncomfortable listening to it, but it's just meant to sort of emulate them feelings and thoughts.
That's it, I think even in the live version, it really comes across, but at the same time, it is still singing, and it's still harmony, but it's still there's a bit of desperation. Not desperation, anyway.
Yeah, well, that's
the voices in your head.
Yeah, 100%.
Sometimes the song comes to you, the song writes you rather than you write the song.
Maybe isn't that a bit about music after all, I don't know.
Maybe.
You know your stuff.
All right, listen, Kierzo and the Afades, looking forward to getting that seeing that video as well. And the song's available now on Spotify, iTunes?
Yeah, iTunes, okay. Apple Music, anywhere.
So go
you
in
want.
And have a listen to it. Brilliant stuff. Enjoyed that. Well done. Brilliant, says the listener. Hello to my nephews, Kieran and Cahir Doyle from Auntie Sarah in Saville. Or Seville?
Seville, yeah.
Seville in. Foreign?
Spain, yeah.
Why weren't you watching? It's on YouTube. Okay, so just in case you guys were feeling a bit grown up, your auntie's just sorted that out.
Thanks. Thanks, Auntie Sarah. Appreciate it.
All right, listen, thank you so much. Brilliant stuff.
Thanks for having me.
You stick together, I'm sure we'll be hearing more from you in the future, and sure, why not? Just very finally, because the key message, Frankie, is if this resonates, this conversation resonates, what do you advise people to do? Who do they contact? How do they get that signposting that we've sort of been referencing there?
Well, Donegal Youth Service, right off the bat, 07491-29630. And you just ask for any of the youth workers there, or can I speak to someone? And the Connecting for Life, I don't have a number for that, but you can get it online. It's the HSC Suicide Prevention Service. And then there's the Children's Young People Services Committee website, CIPSE. And on that, parents will be signposted to all the various services across Donegal.
All right, Kieran, thank you. Grace, well done again to you. That's Grace Murphy, of course. Carl Warner, great stuff on the guitar there. Grace Nugent and bass. Thanks, Grace. Good to have you back in. And Cahir Doyle at the back there on drums. Cahir, thank you so much. All right, brilliant stuff.
Thanks for having us, Greg.
Agree? Back after these.
Text or WhatsApp your view to Greg on 086 60 25000.
Okay, thank you so much for staying with us. We're well into the last hour of the show here now. That song was lovely, says a listener. The young man sounded like George Ezra. It brightened my morning. That's good. I actually, with respect to Mr. Ezra, preferred his vocals there. Delighted to hear the councillor raising this issue. I waited on a council house for 12 years and was delighted with our home, but one of my neighbours didn't like living in the place and basically pulled the curtains and left the house empty for years. She paid the rent but never stayed there. It's such a crying shame and a waste. Another, how can I report someone who's renting their council house while living in the north? Where are you? Asks, was he at the meeting on wind farms? He's not here, so I can't. Ask me, Hull, is there not a council policy that any house which has been rented cannot be left vacant for more than 6 weeks at a time without notifying the council? I'm sure there is, but the problem is that there are rules and regs there, but the whole conversation really was about people not respecting them. The effect of the killing of Aisling Murphy in Irish society has lasted, says the head of the Dublin Rape Crisis Centre. Tomorrow marks the first anniversary of the death of the... In fact, it is today, isn't it? Today marks the first anniversary of the death of the primary school teacher in County Offaly, which shocked the country. The Justice Minister has said tackling gender-based violence is a priority for the government. And I'm interested to speak to Dr. Marie Hainsworth, manager of the Donegal Domestic Violence Services, on this. Dr. Marie, my emotions are somewhat mixed on this, in that it's still happening, and it happens. And of course, there was and rightly so, a massive reaction to the awful killing of Aisling Murphy. But then subsequently, there's been other women that have been killed, and the spotlight's not shone quite as bright. So whilst the while some people believe that maybe we have moved forward in this issue, for me, it feels like we're treading water to some extent. Marie, I don't know what your views are, but I'm very interested in them.
Yeah, morning, Greg, and thanks for looking at the issue. It's never going to be fixed overnight. That's definitely one thing, and I do agree with that. And we've always, Ireland currently has, I think it's one woman a month murdered through domestic circumstances. And Aisling's case was slightly different in that it wasn't a domestic case in that sense. But the reality is, when we're looking at safety, the government did step in, but it's full of this. It does react to stuff, and it makes a lot of promises. And it likes, it likes a shiny cover of a book, but it doesn't necessarily fill that book with anything. Mm-hmm. And that's where we're at the moment. We've been made a lot of promises about increased funding to the sector, restructuring the organisation. The DSGBV unit, which looks at these issues, is currently on the Toothler. This has been moved into justice. But the reality is it hasn't moved into justice yet, and it's been downsized within Toothler. There's been no additional resources. A staff have left. They've not been replaced. So actually, at this moment in time, the resources and kind of oversight of this work is actually less now than it was a year ago. And I know it's in an interim place, and I know it's in a process of transition, but it's at a very difficult place. And it could quite easily fall off the radar when we've got all the other issues that government's focusing on. You know, it's looking at hospitals, it's looking at the housing crisis. And it is at a point where we really do need to make sure this doesn't drop off politicians' agendas.
Yeah, and to some extent, those issues you mentioned are also, there's a crossover, there's an interlinking there as well. You see, I do express my frustration about the press sometimes, because, and this is, I'm not attributing, asking you to comment on this at all, Mary, but for some time, to me, the media is just feeling more and more like an arm of the government, in that the Justice Minister says tackling gender violence is a priority for the government. She says things are going to change, but we need to see how, when, targets, are those targets being met? If not, why? We don't need ministers for observation. What we need is action that actually improves things. And as if you've outlined, there's a strong argument to say that things have actually disimproved. And I think it's really important, whether they want a job in future with the government or not, that these journalists begin to start probing politicians and getting exact answers that they can be held to record on.
Yeah, and the other way they can do that, I suppose, is to do that investigative journalist piece where they actually talk to the services on the ground, because it's no good. Yes, the government can make promises, and, if you went offices now and spoke to them, they will come back with the same rhetoric of this is what's in place, this is what we've allocated, so much money. Like, so much money has been allocated, and that was announced at the beginning of December, and we all had to put in applications and look for it, and we were told by, you know, mid-December that we would be told whether we've got that funding. Well, this is a month later. We still haven't been told. We still don't know what our annual budget is for this year. We still haven't signed any service level agreement or anything because nobody knows what the figures are. So, you know, there is a danger that it's kind of slipping, and lots of promises, lots of media hype. But it does need the media to follow up with services and make sure that the other side of that story is being validated. You know, if this is what government's saying, where is that happening on the ground? You know, can you talk to services that can prove that? And that's the piece that I think that's missing with the media.
Yeah, and whilst we talk about the awful deaths of women, one a month, as you mentioned, and as you quite rightly pointed out, the Aisling Murphy death was not necessarily, it wasn't a domestic violence incident. This domestic violence is happening all the time, and there are cases where it leads up to that. So it's to, of course, eliminate as much as we possibly can instances of domestic violence, give people a pathway out of it, make sure that people who are responsible for it are held to account, are heavily punished, so there's a deterrent there. You know, we need to sort of deal with everything that eventually, very sadly, leads to the loss of a life.
It is, and you know, one of the other areas is we need to put in support for perpetrators, you know, and there are perpetrator programs in the country, but there are none in Donegal and the Northwest. And we've been lobbying, well, Sligo would be the nearest one, and we've been lobbying for that for a number of years now, and Justice has always come back to us saying, well, we're doing a review of the program, you know, when we've completed the review, we'll get back to you. Now, that review has been undertaken now for, I would say, 3 or 4 years. It's still being undertaken. So there's still nobody willing to make a decision about whether Donegal deserves to have a perpetrator program, even though our probation services up here could fill that program, you know, overnight with the number of clients they have. So, you know, we have the infrastructure. We've raised the issue nationally, and for 3 or 4 years now, we're just being fobbed off. So, you know, there isn't that kind of willingness to follow through completely. Like, government likes reports and it likes kind of conducting surveys, doesn't like following through and actually implementing any action afterwards. And this is the bit I'm a bit worried about. You know, lots of promises, but not a lot following through at this moment in time.
So just to recap then, to finish on, Dr. Marie, in terms of Donegal Domestic Violence Services, we are halfway through the first month of this year. Just outline where you're at in terms of resources, what information you have about what resources will be available, what's been promised for you to you for 2023, or when you might hear of what will be available to you in 2023. So you can give us sort of an idea of where we're at from a Donegal Domestic Violence Services perspective.
Well, from our core funding point of view, we are assuming we will get the same funding we got last year. So, you know, our core services are not affected. But we have a proposal in with Chisla to expand our accommodation and to work, you know, using more innovative ways of getting accommodation. Because, like you said, the key thing about ensuring people's safety is that they have somewhere to move on to. And with a housing crisis, that isn't necessarily available. So, but we don't know. We were told before Christmas whether we'd got that funding. We've also got an allocation in there looking for someone specifically to work as a housing officer. You know, we would like to know that we can go ahead and recruit for that. But that they're the things that are kind of stalled now. You know, these are key aspects of the work that we need to expand the service, because the numbers are not going down. Like, numbers have not gone down since COVID started. So it's not like there's the lull here or we can just continue as we are. Like, we're just going to meet this challenge more and more.
Dr. Marie Hainsworth, as always, thank you so much indeed. Dr. Marie's manager of the Donegal Domestic Violence Services, 086 60 25000, WhatsApps and texts to that number. Greg, what has happened to the man who was arrested for the murder of Aisling Murphy? Why does it take so long for these trials to happen? Well, there's a couple of things, the reason why. I would say one of them is the fact that to investigate any crime, especially where there's a loss of life, Gardaí and investigators have to exhaust every possibility. You have to imagine, say, for instance, let's talk about any particular case, just on the most basic level. You know, you will have a defence lawyer or team of lawyers, for example, that their mission is to protect the liberty of their client. So they will try and find any flaws, any loopholes, any gaps, in any investigation. So you can imagine then that the Gardaí have to take the time that's required to ensure that any gaps that are there that are plugged, that any evidence that is there that is gathered, it's backed up, that they have experts that can back that up. You know, when you start thinking on it a little bit like that, you can see how the... how the wheels can turn quite slowly. You could also have someone who's might make a defence of them not being them having poor mental health, for example. That could delay things even more so, because different experts would have to be brought in and all. So, I mean, I can see how these things take time. As I say, some of those examples I gave are not relating to that case at all. It's just to give some examples. I had numerous instances of where I received adverts related to simple conversations with others. The alternator in my car packed in, and before I could take it to a mechanic, I was getting ads for car spare parts. More recently, a passing bird dropped a bomb on my son's head. We jokingly remarked that he should do the lottery. That evening, he got several ads promoting the national lottery. The number of times this happens puts it outside the scope of coincidence. All right, okay. That is on a more... a light-hearted note. Let's stay with that for a moment. Hi, Greg. You're 100% correct regarding the phone listening or analysing calls. I also had a conversation with someone about something I had never Googled or talked about before. And within a few hours, I had ads on Facebook regarding exactly what I was talking about. All I kept thinking was, how did that happen? Now, for people who believe it happens, they can't be convinced otherwise. For other people, particularly I think those maybe that work in technology and believe it's not happening, they think we're crazy. The Ballybuffet potholes I text in about yesterday were filled in the afternoon. This time a roller was used. It'll be interesting to see how long fillings last. Pothole repair is not rocket science. Well done to the council and the council workers for getting on that as quickly as they did. And let's hope the use of the roller... is helpful there. It was explained last night because of the change in the Irish Prime Minister since Christmas that it would have been inappropriate to meet Mary Lou McDonald of the opposition party before they had got to meet Leo, so not a snub. That comes in from Derek. Our government is going to allow a British company come here to buy up acres of land for planting trees. Yeah, indeed. We discussed that with Minister Charlie McConnell, although I didn't really get it on the record from him. And you know, sometimes you try and ask questions, right? And sometimes the non-answer is the answer in and of itself. But if you don't ask the questions, you don't know. Ask the questions a couple of times. Was he opposed to companies coming in? He says, well, we'll discuss this with Kutcher. Hello, I've contacted the ESB several times to get lights fixed on the main dairy to Buncrana Road at Farn, outside the Red Door Bar and Restaurant. Very dark stretch of busy road, and three street lights are out for over 15 months. See attached on the DCC website that two of these are noted. Do you know who could fix these, please, or who could get these sorted? We will follow that up for you, Mary. Greg, what are your thoughts on zebra crossings in Ballybuffet? It's a disaster waiting to happen with the dark weather. Why have enough traffic light? We have enough traffic light crossings. Well, there's no lights on them. That's the problem. I said on the day they were installed, I had a problem with them, especially on dark, wet nights, as you're approaching them and someone steps out and they happen to be in the black section. There's no lights on them. This was supposed to be some sort of a test to see how they work. Clearly, they like how they're working. I don't like them at all. I said from the beginning that I thought they presented an unnecessary danger there. I'm tired saying your phone is like Big Brother listening to everything you say. It freaks me out at times, says another caller there. Raymond says, I could not have written a poem anywhere as good as ChatGPT. Can we now possibly get ChatGPT to take over the running of the Dublin government, since ChatGPT is more intelligent and creative than any other humans in government? Think of the billions of euros we could save. Hey, I'm gone before the government's gone. It's only a matter of time, if it's not already happening, that AI will be doing links on radio in between music. Hi, Greg, just wondering what has happened to the 10:30 song. Well, what do you think? We can bring... did you type that, Caroline? We can bring it back if you want. No problem. Let us know. Maybe you prefer to keep the flow of the show going. Maybe you like that little interlude at 10:30. We're a democracy here. You know, if Elon Musk can run polls, we can run polls too. Do you want the 10:30 track back? 0866 25,000. Or are you happy with the way things are right now? Well done, Margaret Rose and Micheál Colum. We appreciate all the hard work that has gone into saving our service. As we know, it was never the intention to close the service, but restructure, which would have lost our weekly groups, which we need. Thanks to Tusa and Froiger for listening to our voice. Yeah, as long as it wasn't a case that they had to be dragged to the table on that issue. Right. Right, Sinead joins us on the programme now. Good morning, Sinead.
Morning, Greg.
Right, okay. I mean, presumably, obviously, you're familiar with this phrase, single unvetted males. Normally, the way I hear it is single unvetted males of fighting age. That seems to be a sentence that's used quite regularly. You're calling it out, are you, or what's your view?
All I'm really saying is I would like to know where people are getting this information. So are they getting it on a post on Facebook that these men are single men? Or are they actually getting the information directly from a reliable source? I can only go by what I've been, you know, from speaking to asylum seekers themselves. What they will tell me is that a lot of these men, they're not actually single men. They are actually fathers and husbands. It costs an awful lot of money for them to try and even make the journey to try and get asylum. So what normally happens is that the man, the husband or the father, is chosen from that family as A, being the person most likely to survive the journey, and B, they want to see if it's safe for their families before, because, you know, think about it logically, they're not going to send their kids off on their own, you know. Mm-hmm. You know, even though you may want to get that you want to get out the most as the kids.
Let me put it to you then, though. So say, for instance, you're living in Dublin or some other urban area, and a coach pulls up, mm-hmm. right, and, you know, 30 guys get off the bus on their own, whether they're single mm-hmm. or not. I don't even know what that means. We don't even know what anything about them, whether it's sexual orientation or what, and nothing. It doesn't, you know what I mean? So I don't really to prejudge all that. But though, that being said, and they walk into a hotel in a particular area that's probably already got under pressure for housing, under pressure for school places, though that might not be relevant in this case at this time, but maybe also the local hospital or the local GP. There's no consultation with the local people. They're not. This is not discussed, right? And then, of course, right, there are elements that will suggest that this is going to be a danger to women. Now, there's not a great deal of evidence to support that. But can you like forget the people then that they have an agenda that come into an area to try and stir things up? You could understand, could you not, that local people might go, well, where's our accommodation? Where's our house? Why can't we see a doctor? Why won't we ask if this particular area can take another 30 men? Can you understand then how locals would be concerned about that?
I completely understand that, you know, people would be concerned about the volume of people increasing in the area, especially given the pressures on both the health system and the housing. Absolutely, I do. But my objection is to this is essentially people believing this stuff that they're reading on the internet. I mean, if you're following it, and I follow it quite a bit, and I have friends who work in the scenes and watching what goes on and where these things are coming from. This single unvetted male phrase just really rankles me because people are not thinking and they're repeating it. They're just seeing it on Facebook, seeing it on Twitter.
My son is a single unvetted male.
Exactly. My son's a single unvetted male. You know, he moved over. He's left the country and there was no big hue and cry about him moving over. I don't know. Is it because he's, you know, because of his skin color?
Do you think then that the genuine concerns of locals, which should be addressed by those that are elected to make these decisions, are being weaponized then by people with because you see, I think the left or whatever, I don't really get into this left-right stuff, but those that are labelling anyone who has an objection to this as far-right, you see, I don't think that helps at all either, because it means we can't have a civilised conversation, you know. So people, if you have one view, you're a left liberal. If you have another view, you're far-right, with all the connotations that goes with that label. I think people have, mm-hmm. right across the political spectrum, need to maybe, as much as they can, either disengage with those labels or actually only use them when they are specifically appropriate. And I think you would know maybe some of the cases or individuals that I might be talking about.
Very, very much so. And this is the thing. So in a lot of those protests, and I know, so for instance, the one in East Wall, there was a man who was being interviewed by RTE, for example. And he was on and being labelled as a concerned resident, as a resident of the area. What wasn't said was that he was a member of a far-right party. And he wasn't doing that. So he was getting this all drummed up. He was bringing in his far-right party members
But he's also is a member of the local community, though. Yeah.
But okay. I don't think that is, it should be complete. If you're going to talk to people, I think it should be complete. I mean, I know you make every effort to make sure that, say someone's from a political party, you will say, yeah, a member of a party or whatever. But what I don't, and then you see, the thing is, if people see this as just a concerned community, if that's how someone is described and it's not, made clear that this person is a member of a far-right party.
Yeah, but you can make that differentiation. Quite racist. Sinead, you can make that differentiation, is it? I don't know, anyway. You can make that, you can see the difference there. Everyone can see the difference, can't they? Do you know what I mean? I think
they can.
I think most people can.
If it's given the information.
Yeah, but I think most people can work out the difference between concerned residents. And we've always tried to give on this program space where someone could come on and say, look, I'm a bit worried about what's happening in my area because we don't have the services for all these people coming in. And they're not racist. They're not far right. They're not nothing. They're just saying, they've got their own children.
Yeah.
I just think this division, this divisive politics where we call each other different things, and I'm not accusing you of this, Sinead, we're getting nowhere with it. We're just literally getting nowhere with it.
I would agree with that much. Mm. And I mean, what you say, ordinary people who are just there talking about, the concern about the pressure on the health system, concern, especially now with all the stuff that's going on around Mica and people are homeless. I absolutely 100%. You cannot say a bad word because people are concerned about their families, their children, and they're looking at that. But the focus is wrong. Yeah. The focus shouldn't be on the people who are coming in.
Like,
the focus should be on the people in government who have let us down for decades, years.
I worked in a part of London in my late teens, early 20s. I can't remember what it was. And I was, and people over here think I've got an English accent. I worked over there a couple of years, but over there I had an Irish accent. And it was in a particular bar that I worked in, because I worked in pubs. And I was called names. And one evening I was walking home and I was chased through a park by a group of guys. And the motivation was because I was Irish. And maybe because I was white. I don't know. I'm not going to talk to that. I really don't know. And then there was shouting outside the complex. Now, I hadn't engaged with anyone. I was very naive, very shy. I hadn't rubbed up anyone in the hard way. But I'll tell you one thing. It was scary. It was intimidating. Mm-hmm. It was horrible. And very, very soon thereafter, I moved home because I couldn't take it.
Exactly.
And then when I hear
and those
of families...
And those people who are there, they have no choice.
And then
they can't move home.
That's it. And then when I hear families in these, and there are kids involved as well, and there's Irish people, what we've went through elsewhere, shouting, go home or get them out or send them home, that's not who we are. We were the victims of that in the past. That's not who we are. And I don't think it's representative of us as a society either. I really don't.
No, and I don't think so either. And I completely, what I'm asking for is that people stop and think before when they read something on Facebook, when they read something on Twitter, just stop and think. Where is this actually coming from? Is this accurate? Is this factual? Because there are poor people and there are children in those places where, and just going by reports, there are very, very horrible things being said. And they're small kids who've come through, and women as well. And even the men, I mean, I don't care who you are, man, woman, or a child, there's bound to be trauma there. And you arrive into a country after trying to seek asylum, from a war zone, what is effectively a war zone, or threats to your life.
Right. And you gave the example.
And people stand outside chanting.
Yeah, but you gave the example then of the effort, say, someone from Syria has to do to come here to try and really get a better life for their family, right? But there are individuals that can't get into England anymore, right? Economic migrants, and the government accepts this as well, by the way, that rip up their documentation on their way here. They can board a flight with documentation, but they rip it up because they think they've got a better chance of staying here.
The state
does need to, and I think Leo Varadkar committed to it last night, tidy this whole area up so the public discourse will be easier then. And again, that is the role of government. It's not shouting at a refugee won't change that. But this is a lot of this is government policy and inaction that's led us to where we're at.
Precisely. And this is exactly what I'm saying. The target is wrong. The target shouldn't be the people who are coming. And even those, as we term them, economic migrants. We're a nation of economic migrants, you know. I mean, how many people do we know who've gone to America and just stayed for, you know, after a holiday and stayed there illegally? We are a nation of economic migrants.
Well, in relation to that, there are more Irish people living in Australia. Sorry, there's less Irish people more Irish people living in Australia than there are homeless people in Australia, right? So someone in Australia could say, oh, well, get the Irish out and house the Australians. They could. Now, someone could say to me, ah, but the Irish are over there working and it's different because that's not what it's like in Ireland. Over 10,000 Ukrainian refugees are now working in Ireland, many working in the care system, in the health service system, filling employment gaps. So it is kind of the same. And more of them are going to work. I just think we need to remember our history, what we're doing right now, all those. Remember that there's 55,000 undocumented Irish in America that can't come home because they won't be able to get back into America because they don't have the proper documentation. So we need to remember where we're at, where we've come from, but also call on the government to, where there are genuine problems and concerns, for them to be addressed. Are, for instance, migrants being put into rich areas of Dublin, or is it only areas where there are particular issues with housing and what have you, or people have less disposable income? You know, this also does have to be discussion, doesn't it, for complete equity and fairness?
I think everything needs to be on the table, but it does need to be done with the correct people. I mean, what needs to happen is that this all has to go to our public reps. That's where it should be going. They're the people who are elected, who we elected to represent us and our views in the Dáil. Standing outside and weaponizing much loved songs to turn them into racist meaning outside of accommodations where there are men, women and children and they're listening to that is not the way to go. I mean, you know, you're talking about people working. People working from Ireland and countries all over the world, the asylum seekers here are not allowed to work. Maybe that's something that should be.
They are after 6 months.
Maybe they should be able to.
I think after 6 months they are. I do take your point.
Those steps need to be addressed.
I mean, if I get it. I think from all different ways, which I'm sure you can as well. But my word, if everyone who didn't look like Ireland looked like 30 years ago, let me put it like that, went home, our health service would be destroyed, our care service, it would just be, this country would be in an awful lot of bother, and there aren't enough Irish away to come back to fill those gaps either, by the way. And some people choose to go to experience life in a different way. And a phrase that
they don't
I
want to come back either, correct?
Of course, because it's you know? Not a place for them to come back. It's just really important that we all actually think for ourselves, that we all, that we get our information from different sources, because everyone, regardless of what, could bandy the sheeple view around, you know, and none of us want to be sheeple. We want to think for ourselves and make our own decisions to make sure that we're not cannon fodder for other people or whatever. You know, everyone should think for themselves, do the research, get their own stats.
Yeah, that's my concern. And it's not to say, and I want to be very clear about this, I'm not here saying that, you know, everyone who says anything about the situation with, you know, concerns about anybody coming into the area is a member, you know, is far right or a member of a far right group. But what I'm clearly saying is there are instigators in those communities. There are instigators online and they are very much far right actors. And just be careful who you're listening to and what you're reading and sharing, because what you're doing is you're giving them power to just giving them power. Just think for yourself, stop. Is this good? And ask yourself, is this factual? Where is it coming from?
Because all right, Sinead. Yeah, I get you.
Yeah, that's just my concern. It's always been my concern about the far right growth in Ireland, anywhere in the world,
or far left, or far anything. Anything that's in any way extreme in any particular direction. But people, listen, people make up their own minds. And Sinead, thanks for your time. 086 60 25,000 WhatsApps and texts to that number. Call 07491 25,000. A caller says that lady makes some very good points about the male travelling alone in the hopes of getting their family out. Why I hadn't heard before, which is what debate is all about. However, you only have to see what happened in Sweden and Germany to see what quite a lot of males do. I have family in Germany and their lives have completely changed since the influx of immigrants to their area. So definitely, I think locals have a right to have their say without name calling. But was that an immigration policy or was that the same as what we're seeing here right now? Anyway, listen, that's where we have to leave it on the programme today.